Doom do 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 do. Hi, plant people. Welcome to episode 57 of
Bloom and Grow Radio.
Hey, plant friends. I hope you're having a wonderfully planty week. As you heard last week on Bloom and Grow Radio, we have officially launched our Bloom and Grow Radio Plant Friends apparel line, which is t-shirts, sweatshirts, and accessories all inspired by Bloom and Grow Radio. I am over the moon about it and about the response that you guys have had to it so far. The idea for the line came to me when I had started Bloom and Grow Radio, and I was looking around for a plant lady shirt to wear that I felt like was really cute and comfortable and not just like a generic thing I ordered on the internet. And I really couldn't find one that I liked. So I went online myself and just designed a one-off shirt that I knew that I could wear when I was doing Bloom and Grow Radio stuff. But I realized that I got so many questions and comments about the shirt that I figured I just needed to make a line of shirts for you guys. Enter Maria, an amazing listener. Her Instagram handle is Forest Floor. She's a marketing professional and a designer, and she helped me not only design the line of plant lady t-shirts that I've been looking for my personal collection of clothing, but we also turned it into a whole line. So there's a whole line of botanical bro stuff, some keep blooming, keep growing stuff, all stuff inspired by Bloom and Grow Radio and what I talk about on my show. So we've got tees, tanks, sweatshirts, and a ton of accessories all inspired by the show. I'd love for you to check the line out. It's so cute and the stuff is so cozy and so comfortable. We're really proud of it. So you can check it out at my website, the resources page, which is bloomandgrowradio.com/resources. To see the entire line, or you can click the link in the show notes. So today's episode is really exciting. Dave Hunter, the founder of Crown Bees, is on the show to talk about pollinators and how important they are for our environment. So Dave is a native bee expert, which is different from the honeybee, which you will find out in our conversation. He is so knowledgeable and shares so much information about pollinators, what pollination is, how it happens, bees in general, why the honeybee might not be the king of the bee world that we think that it is, and how we can help pollinators continue to help our local environments literally bloom and grow, because it's important that we take action as well. Pollinators are honestly something I really knew very little about, and Dave really walks us through everything we need to know about them and explains things so beautifully, and I'm so thankful for his time. Especially because it is the growing season now. It is springtime, and I hope you're all going to be outside in your gardens this summer. So it's good knowledge to empower us for spring and summer. Before we dive into the episode, I'm so excited to introduce you guys to our newest sponsor that I am totally impressed with, totally in love with, Mountain Crest Gardens. It's growing season, plant friends, and if you are interested in adding succulents to your plant family this season, Mountain Crest Gardens is your go-to online resource for incredible quality succulents delivered right to your door. They have hundreds of soft indoor succulents and hardy outdoor succulents available on their website year-round and over 10,000 five-star reviews to back them up. I recently got a shipment of their amazing succulents delivered to my house. You have to go to my Instagram and check my pinned unboxing to see the incredible quality for yourself. And the two things that really struck me about Mountain Crest Gardens is, one, they really have put a lot of time and energy into their packaging. Their materials are all biodegradable or recyclable, which I can really appreciate. And the plants clearly were really thought about when they were being packed up. You can go see for yourself. And number two, the quality of succulents was absolutely amazing. But what was even more unbelievable was Mountain Crest Gardens' commitment to education. Each plant arrived with a name tag that had the full Latin name of the plant. And the website is a treasure trove of different informational blogs and resource pages all about the different types of succulents. You'll see me break that down in my Instagram story as well. So, plant friends, Mountain Crest Gardens is offering you 15% off your first purchase with them. Go to mountaincrestgardens.com/bloom to redeem your 15% off coupon. And I strongly recommend just going to the website to learn a little bit more about succulents, because I certainly learned a ton. That's mountaincrestgardens.com/bloom for your 15% off coupon code. Okay, here's Dave. Hi, Dave. Thanks for joining me on Bloom and Grow Radio today.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
I'm so excited to have you on to talk about. I am terrified of bees. I am allergic to bees. I have avoided bees my whole life. So I'm excited to ask you and learn a lot more about this foreign little group that I don't care too much for.
Well, hopefully we'll change that. I'm very passionate about bees, and it's always fun to discover with someone who's fresh.
I'm very open and very ready for you to educate me and change my mind about these things I've been very scared of my whole life. But before we dive into bees, I'd love to just set this conversation up by asking you what pollinators are and why they're important for our gardens and why bees are the most important of all the pollinators.
It's all about sex.
All right.
Yep.
I like the opening line there. Let's go. Let's dive in there.
So the flowers have male and female parts, and they need to have pollen move from male to female. And that's, you know, without that, then you don't get a seed to develop. The plant doesn't have tubers, it's spread, etc. So the reason you have flowers out there is they need someone to help them have sex, transfer pollen from male to female. Okay. So now who's doing that? Gosh, it could be a beetle walking across a flower. It could be a hummingbird. It could be a moth. It could be bats. And there's a variety of things that all they're doing. And there's nothing magical. A lot of these insects are digging into the flower to find nectar rewards. And that's the flower developed nectar rewards so that someone's going to take pollen from male to female. You can look at all of those creatures that are moving pollen around. And one of the most efficient creatures out there is a bee, because they've developed hairy bodies, and they've worked alongside flowers, and they're out there planting their bodies, gathering nectar, gathering pollen and all their hairs of their bodies, and moving on to the next flower. Super cool that the pollen's falling off on the next flower, the bee's cramming its abdomen, and they're kind of belly flopping, gathering a little bit of nectar, gathering a lot of pollen. And it's just through that exchange we find that bees are probably the most efficient teammates of flowers.
How exactly does the bee carry the pollen? Like, why are they going after the pollen so much, and how are they carrying it from flower to flower?
So bees are looking for pollen and a little bit of nectar for their young. They're flying into a flower, and they're carrying the pollen on the native bees, just kind of in the hairy bodies, and the pollen is kind of carried dry, and the bees have got a little bit of nectar in the end of their tongues. And so as they go back to their place where the bee is nesting, they're just scraping that pollen and nectar off and making a little bit of bee bread. When they lay their egg in that 30 or so trips worth of gathering this pollen, when they're laying their egg into there, that food allows that egg to, you know, turn into a larva. The larva consumes all the pollen, and it so that's there.
So they're using it as food for their incoming larva after they've since passed, and the larva is continuing to grow. And it's the same for honeybees?
Honeybees, yes. They just need more of it, so they're more fastidious at gathering pollen.
Got it.
And then while the bees are flying, they do use the nectar as their energy source.
So they're actually eating the nectar to fly and then also bringing it back for their larva.
Exactly.
Okay, cool. And you've made your career studying bees and their behaviors and how we can better help them do their thing. So I realized I went right into what pollinators are, and I didn't even ask you about who you are and how you got to being the founder of Crown Bees. So before I start asking you all these nerdy questions I'm so excited to ask you about, can you tell us a little bit about how you got this passion for the outdoors and bees and how you've built this company today?
Eagle Scout from years ago, and you wind up, your career goes along a path. I was a real estate director for DHL, and they closed the doors about 11 years ago. And I love finding patterns in nature and just thinking them through. And I was able to look at an industry that was starting, mason bees. I put little quote signs in the air. These are whole nesting bees. And boy, the almond industry years ago, the biggest pollination event in the world, were having issues, and they were studying this bee. And my question was, gosh, I wonder if we could create an industry, if industry even exists for this one thought bubble. I reached out for about 6 weeks, talked with every researcher in the nation, every practitioner I could, and determined that, yeah, actually, this seemed to make sense. Let's go forward. So I, over a couple years, created an industry. So it's now Orchard Bee Association is an industry that nonprofit and a lot of people are all involved with. And then I developed a company, Crown Bees, to buttress that industry. And my initial premise was too simple. And I now realize it's more important, too simple, meaning we were just raising a mason bee for the almonds. And you fast forward to today, and I now realize that the most important thing is teaching about native bees and trying to create change so that my grandchildren can have the food they need. And I strongly believe that by understanding how our native bees work and working with them rather than working with nature rather than against nature, I think we can actually create more food, probably 25% more food in the world by just using native bees.
I love that. That's beautiful. That just gave me goosebumps. So pollinators, basically anything that flies or crawls that is helping these plants with their beautiful flowers have sex with themselves or pollinate themselves.
Yeah, exactly. There we go.
So there we go. We're starting that up. So bees, why are they the most efficient pollinators and what makes them so special? I feel like bees are talked about a lot lately. What makes them so important in our yards, in our gardens, in wilderness in general?
Great question. I love answering it. We, the humans, top of the pile of the, you know, the food pyramid, need a lot of food. And what we find is that when we artificially put a lot more food out there than nature probably had in that area, we need to have more pollination so that we get more food. And today, for our, you know, this huge human species, we need an awful lot of food. And because the native bees probably couldn't keep up with the pollination demand that we're putting out there, we're having issues. And, you know, they brought in that, we'll talk about the honeybee. We've got some other bees out there. I think the raw piece there is human food is typically all we think about, comma, your yard, every flower out there needs a bee to bloom and to, you know, propagate, comma, you look out to the wilderness and your big leaf maples and your oak trees, and there's all of these bushes in the fields that provide seeds for the quail or the mouse to get eaten by a bird or an eagle or something. I mean, you know, all of these, the nuts in the trees that the squirrel's eating, the habitat out there. Bees are providing habitat for deer, etc. And so it goes past just our human food.
And when you say habitat, you mean they're not only pollinating the food that we're eating, they're helping facilitate everything else that every other animal in the world is also consuming.
Pretty much. Yep. Whether they are consuming it. Now, some things are wind pollinated. So there's conifers are wind pollinated. And there's a lot of, I think wheat is wind pollinated. And a lot of the things aren't. So we have bushes and other trees actually need to have pollen move from point A to point B through an insect. And that's the habitat of, you know, the trees are created so that, you know, there's now house and homes and food. So it's a big deal. I mean, honestly, it's a big deal, Maria.
It sounds like they are part of most of the processes out there in nature in some form, whether it's direct or whether it's indirect.
Yeah, exactly.
So I feel like I see a lot of headlines and I see a lot of activists that are saying the bees are disappearing and there's something wrong with the bees, but I don't really know what is actually wrong. So can you educate us on that? Can you fill in those blanks for us?
Yes, I can. We're always asking in my company, why? Why is something going wrong? And it typically folds around we're doing something wrong against nature. For example, when we see too many dandelions in our yard, well, why do I need to spray them out? Well, we've got, you know, the root cause is we've brought in a European lawn and our ideal of beauty has nothing in it. Okay. And you look at, well, the why of it is if I relaxed and looked around what's in a natural world, there probably is no huge expanse of lawn in one place with nothing in it. Okay, so we look now into the bees. We do hear a lot of things going wrong with mostly the honeybee.
Right.
And so if we actually look at the species of bees in the world. There's about 23,000, 24,000 species of bees in the world. And of those, that many, 7 of them are honeybees.
Wow.
Yeah. And actually, so going to the U.S., you know, out of the 4,000 species of North American bees, how many make honey? None. The only honey-making bee is the European honeybee. It was brought in from, I think, the pilgrims came across because as they came out to here, there was nothing sweet. And so they needed honey to sweeten their foods. And actually, surprisingly, there wasn't enough pollen out here on the East Coast. And they brought in with them dandelion. So that's a European pilgrim piece that we can get
from. Wait, so there are no bees that make honey in the States. All of the honey production are bees that have been brought over from Europe?
Yes.
I did not know that. Oh, my gosh.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. So this is the imported honey. And, you know, and it's here. You can't take it away. I certainly would never say take away the cherry tree because it didn't live here beforehand. Mm-hmm. You know, no, I'm a naturalist or, you know, I guess a realist. You can't only go back to only heirloom or whatever was here beforehand. So honeybees are a great insect. They provide cool honey, wax and propolis and all these neat things. But it's not the only bee in the world.
Okay, so since we're on the topic of honeybees right now, why don't we dive into what the honeybee issue is and what honeybees are doing, and then we can move on to the different types? Because it sounds like maybe there's separate issues with honeybees versus native bees.
Yeah, to the root cause, I think probably humans are causing the issues. Mm-hmm. Very deep. Okay.
As per usual, so the humans just messing everything up. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Kind of a sad story. Okay, so with the honeybees, and this is actually a simple little statement. Let's go back a couple hundred years. Why did the honeybees 200 years do really well? Okay. So you've got this hive in your farm and the bees are blossoming and they split, they swarm, they send out scouts. And in general, honeybees splitted swarm will move about half a mile away. And the following year, same thing, both hives split, swarm, send out scouts. And again, they don't move back together. They keep on spreading out. And you ask the question, why? Why are they doing this? And it's probably they're really amazing pollen gatherers. So there's not enough food when you put the bees tight together. And probably disease and pest control, those two things. Okay. And you go fast forward into today, what we find in orchards, etc. Because, and when we didn't talk, maybe we'll get a little bit into it. The honeybees are not great pollen spreaders. So you need a hive or two hives per acre of apple trees, okay, or almonds.
You need two hives of honeybees per
acre, right, to completely pollinate 8 days of trees in bloom. All right, and that's fine. That's what we do today, okay? But what happens, within 2 or 3 hours, all the pollen is gone from that orchard, from that acre, and these honeybees go in their 2 to 3 mile range trying to find other pollen. Now, Google Earth this, go way up there, and if you look in a 1 or 2 mile radius, you have over 1 billion honeybees all overlapping, all trying to find, all touching the same flowers in this huge big circle. What we've learned is that the diseases and the mites and all of these things are actually being passed in the flower. And so, you know, what it really comes down to is if you and I were in a high school gymnasium and we put 10,000 people in there and 5 of us walked in for the weekend with the flu, I'm sure we'd spread it everywhere. And so the root cause, what we believe with the honeybees, is there's just because it's such an efficient insect, we have too many of them per acre. And it comes down to if you put 50,000 turkeys in one place, you're going to spread diseases.
So the honeybees are spreading diseases to each other, or they're spreading diseases to the plants?
They're spreading diseases to each other.
So they're getting sick and dying?
Because they are spreading their diseases between. So a sick hive, a sick bee in a sick hive is going to leave nosema in various flowers or drop off varroa mite in various flowers. And healthy bees go to those same flowers and carry it back to their hive.
Okay. And then they infect that entire hive.
Correct. Yeah. That's my premise. And so if you actually went out and looked at, okay, so that's, there you go. I think the root cause is we're misusing an awesome honeybee insect because we think it's the only pollinator. Now go forward. We're learning chemicals aren't probably good for nature. And we've learned that a honeybee because it has to go back to its hive and support the queen and bring honey and the eggs there, they will fly through toxic soup. Whereas your native bees, very surprisingly, and we'll talk a little bit about solitary bees, but your native bees, we're learning, gosh, if it stinks, they fly someplace else. Okay.
So they're not, they don't have that ingrained need to go back and actually infect everyone. They can adjust.
Yes.
So interesting.
I'm going to say we're misusing a honeybee is one of the issues. And then two, chemicals, we find our bees fly away from chemicals. So when your neighbor uses some chemical treatment for their lawn, my bees disappear.
Yeah, why don't you tell that story you told me before we started our interview, because it sounded so interesting.
So a few years ago in Wilsonville, Oregon, you had 42, I think, linden trees around a Target parking lot. And there was, while all the trees were in bloom, there was aphids all over them. And they said, hey, we got to spray these trees because aphids are pooping on all the cars down below. So they sprayed all the trees. And funny, at the same time, almost every single bumblebee in a 5-mile radius died right there in that parking lot. And this all came down to using Safari, which is a neonicotinoid, and it's a big deal. And as a result, Oregon has banned neonicotinoids in our state. But the root cause of this, if we keep on going deeper, was it's not that the aphids are there, but why were they there? Okay, well, you probably had too many linden trees in one area, so it's too much bloom, and the aphids were able to, you know, propagate. But you probably, in the previous year, had killed off the predators, the ladybugs, the lacewings that would be naturally preying on these aphids. And so we were slightly out of balance, and because of the previous year's decisions, this allowed to occur. That's, we're trying to go to the why, not just react.
Yeah, because it's so interesting. And in the houseplant community, sometimes I feel like we experience this just with our plants. You have one issue and you treat that issue instead of looking deeper into why the issue is happening. And especially since it sounds like bees are such an intricate part of so many different aspects of life in nature, treating those aphids, killing off the bees. Now think about how there are no bees that are pollinating, you know, whatever the radius is that all those bees were killed off. That's number one. That's terrifying to think about. And that happens all over the world now with these crazy pesticides. But right, like even think about two steps before that, the aphids predators were probably killed off with some other sort of fungicide before that. So it's as humans messing up, like we're trying to treat this one issue and then not thinking about the broader scope of what could possibly be affected. And I'm assuming that's why we're in this position mm-hmm. that we are in now with the honeybees and with native bees and just with nature in general.
So what we try to do, Maria, my wife and I, we've got a nice backyard and we'll find a rose just chock full of aphids. A couple of years ago, we tied little ribbons to those roses just to know which ones they were. And you'd come back about 2 or 3 days later, and there'd be not one aphid on there. Well, where'd they go?
Yeah, you know, where'd they go? Tell me, Dave.
Someone ate them. You know, it's eat or get eaten. And so by relaxing, we don't do anything to yard, and our lawn still grows, and our flowers still grow, and we prune them, but we don't do any chemicals. And funny, our yard works well.
Okay, so we've talked about the honeybees, but it's very clear to me that I don't understand how many varieties of bees there are. So you had told me about 4 different types of bees. So can we go over those types?
Out of the 20,000 plus species of bees in the world, most of them go in the ground. Actually, they have ground nesting bees. And then those are probably 75%. And then maybe 25% of the bees actually nest in holes, like a hole in a tree or a broken reed, or gosh, we find them in outlets in people's, you know, furniture, et cetera. So ground nesters and hole nesters. Okay. And then 2 other little styles here. There are social, that's honeybees, bumblebees, hornets and wasps. When you've got all these guys all working as a team, one queen and a big hive, that's 10%. 90% are solitary. Every single female bee is a queen. And she's got males and females. And so, I mean, the males mate with the females early on in the spring, and the males die quickly. And the female, for her lifespan, about 6 weeks, she's laying about 20 or so eggs. Those eggs that they laid in these ground holes or reeds over the year develop into adult bees that are next year's bees. The difference between social and solitary on the gentleness, most bees, surprisingly, are very, very gentle. You can hold them in your hands, and it's very rare to get stung. The social bees, when you are walking next to a hive, they immediately need to defend the queen, the honey, the eggs that are inside there, so they will defend. But whole nesting bees, for example, the mason bees we use and the leafcutter bees, you could put your hand right in front of their holes, and they just politely wait for you to move your hand. Very, very gentle insects, most of them, 90%.
Because they're solitary.
Exactly.
So do all bees live in hives?
Honeybees live in hives. Bumblebees are in hives, but so it's 10%. So out of the 4,000, let's just say, 400 species in North America nest in hives. The rest do their own thing in the ground or in holes.
Because in my just like random knowledge, because it sounds like the only knowledge I really have about bees are this small 10% of social bees that I'm scared of being stung.
Exactly. There you go. Exactly.
And they live in hives with their queen because they're social. So the other 90% of bees, which are solitary, are living in a hole in the ground, or they're living like in a hole in a tree?
Yes.
And they're not in a hive, and they're not making honey.
Yes, yes, yes.
Oh my God, this is so silly. But I'm learning a lot right now.
Real quick, when these bees go into the ground, they've burrowed out a little small cell down there, and she's gathered pollen on her belly, a little bit of nectar, and she scrapes it off into that little hole. And maybe 25 to 30 trips worth of going down that hole into that back little reserve, gets a little mound of bee bread, we call it. She backs and lays an egg and then seals that chamber with leaf bits or mud or resin. It's typically waterproof if it's in the ground. But she does all of these. She seals that little chamber from predators. And then in that same little furrow in the ground, she's now laid 10 chambers of bee bread, egg, and sealed something. She dies. They only have a 5 or 6 week lifespan. And over this summer, those eggs hatch, become larvae. The larva eats up all of the pollen, spins a cocoon, metamorphoses into an adult bee, and just sits there patiently waiting until the time of year it's supposed to come out. Cool. So the bees are actually alive 11 months, maybe, as an egg or something, but they're only flying for 6 weeks.
And then they die, just naturally.
And then they die. Yep, exactly. So that's it.
Wow. That's amazing. I mean, this is a different episode. It's amazing. It's just amazing how these bees are just born, like the larva hatches and they just know innately how to do this. That the queen can just go in and do that. She knows how to burrow in, set up this little incubator for her eggs, and then just leaves and dies. And it happens in 6 weeks. I mean, that's kind of amazing.
Okay, so those are ground nesters and the hole nesters. So I think more and more people are hearing about mason bees and soon they'll hear about leafcutter bees. And so in a hole that is about a pencil size, you're going to find a lot of stuff sold from offshore. I'm trying to be nice here. That's bamboo that is wrong size and someone's just selling things to make money. Bees that nest in holes are looking for about a pencil-sized diameter for the bigger bees, and really down to like an eighth of an inch for the small, tiny bees out there, okay? Small, medium, large holes. The bees go into these holes, do the exact same thing. They've gathered their pollen, laid their egg, sealed that chamber, and here's the mason bee that my company sells uses mud, clay, to seal this little chamber. So pollen, egg, mud. There are bees out there that use tree resin. There are bees out there that use masticated, chewed up vegetation, so pollen, egg, vegetation. And that seals their complete 6-inch hole that you and I now have got these eggs for next, valuable eggs for next year that we're going to manage and, use the following year. So my company, we use whole nesting bees because we strongly believe in food. And I can take a bunch of holes from your yard, Maria, and move them to my yard. I can't take a shovelful of ground nesting bees and do the same thing. Okay, so if my company is a food company masquerading as a bee company, Crown Bees.
Right.
Okay, so we're all about food. So I'm focusing on the bees that I can move from your yard to some farmer's field.
You mean physically move because you can't, it's too difficult to actually move what the setup is in the ground.
It's good. I have no idea. I'm going to be crushing cocoons, how deep
they grow. Right. How do you even locate them? Right.
In a hole, I can move from here to there. So that's where we focus on hole nesting bees.
So your passion is native bees, hole nesting bees.
There you go.
How do they pollinate our garden plants that we set up differently than honeybees do?
You're so intuitive. It's almost like we talked about this beforehand.
It's almost like we have the questions written out.
It's almost. One of the other big things that people don't understand, the honeybee is one of the most efficient pollen gatherers out there. When we see these big pollen packs on their hind legs, they licked that pollen. And I talked with my company, Works with Science, Dr. Eric Musson years ago. He said, oh, Dave, that pollen on the hind legs, that's not pollination anymore. That's bee food. Most all of the pollen that the honeybee gathers, because they need 1,500 little mounds of pollen gathered for that 1,500 eggs that queen might lay, they need all the pollen. And so they're fastidious, cleansing themselves before they leave the flower. Little pollen falls off, okay? Your mason bees, the leafcutter bees that we've got, they're kind of belly flopping into the flower, and they've got their hairy bodies, and the dry pollen just kind of gets crammed into their bodies. And they fly to the next flower, and as they're belly flopping again, cramming it in there, pollen's falling off everywhere. And so the native bees are crappy pollen gatherers, but amazing pollen spreaders. If you went back into the commercial orchard, where you've got 1 to 2 hives, 60,000 honeybees, 400 mason bees will equal about 30,000 and probably provide 2 to 3 times the yield for the farmer.
Because okay, spread, we got to break some of this down because you lost me a little bit.
Ask away.
So to my understanding, the native bees are more efficient at pollinating our plants because honeybees are selfish about the pollen because they need to bring so much pollen back to their hives.
That's perfect. Keep going.
So the honeybee is more obsessive or prioritizes getting that pollen back to their hives, not necessarily spreading the pollen around different plants. Native bees are just flip-flopping all over the place. They don't need as much pollen themselves. They're not making honey. They're not going back to a queen that they're serving with this. So they're able to be messier, and because they're messier, actually effectively help us pollinate our gardens
significantly more.
So when you say that a farmer is going to get more yield, you're meaning that native bees are going to pollinate your plants better, like
significantly better.
The yield will be larger because your plants will be better pollinated.
Absolutely. So with our customers out there, as we sell mason bees across the country, we find people having to put boards under their plum tree branches because they're just so laden with fruit. They've never had that much before. Just
because the quality of the pollination is much
so
higher.
Much higher.
Because so much more pollen is being left on the plants.
Yes, ma'am. Exactly.
That's very interesting.
Why don't farmers know this? It just frustrates us. You know, the poor farmers. There's only one bee to the world. There's only one bee to the farmer. And science...
Like, literally, it's so funny. It's because even just in society, I feel like I know wasps are scary and honeybees are like cute and have hives. Don't touch the hive. Because you're going to get stung. And then bumblebees don't sting you. Those are like the three things I know about bees.
Right. And that's fine. This is where, as we start learning a little bit more about nature, really, I mean, to understand there's ground nesters, hole nesters. There you go. Some are social. You're going to get stung. Some are solitary, most are solitary, and you won't. I mean, that's all you need to know right now. And a couple extra names, mason bee, leaf cutter bee. Those are two different.
Right. And that mason bees are the bees that you work with the most. So what makes a bee a native bee?
Native bees are, I'm going to say, wild. Well, let's just go with non-honeybee.
Oh, okay, cool. So a non-honey, because honeybees come from Europe. So a native bee is like a bee that would occur naturally in the States,
here,
if we're talking about the States.
And so bumblebees are all native, mason bees, leafcutters, ground, minor bees, digger bees, there's all, you know, blah, 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 blah. There's 4,000 species of bees that were here thousands of years ago.
Got it. So are there issues with native bees the way there are issues with native bees disappearing the way there are issues with the honeybees?
So, Maria, I think it's, to me, it's human encroachment that we've put houses and roads, et cetera, in areas where the bees used to be, and then probably chemical usage, our inadvertent use of lawn treatment and insecticides, et cetera, are wiping out the bees. We do find, like, when, and I'm not saying this is right or wrong, but when we spray for a Zika down in the southeast, people have said, oh my gosh, look, my poor honeybees died. What no one's asking the question, when you spray this aerial, whatever you're spraying out there, every living insect that flies, ladybug, dragonfly, native bee, is dead.
Yikes.
Yep. The only thing we care about are Mrs. Smith with her 27 hives that died and knocking off the mosquito. We don't realize the ecological damage that this aerial spraying does. And the answer is, I don't want to have Zika. But do we understand the negative impact this has on our, you know, ecological, you know, footprint?
Are we starting to see the effects of that yet? Or do you think that the next generation is really going to experience that? Because we've been using sprays and fungicides and, you know, toxic lawn care for a while.
I think that Europe is ahead of us, Maria, when we're seeing significantly less pesticides, et cetera, going into Europe. The consumers out there are buying the exact same apples and cherries and, you know, whatever fruits and vegetables are being done. They might be a little uglier or smaller. I don't know what, but people are growing it and buying it. And the bees are doing well in Europe or better. Out here, we haven't learned that lesson and we've got chemical everywhere. And I think it's going to be a while till we learn our lesson. Not yet.
Not yet.
Not yet.
I almost want to ask, what can you predict are going to be the scary outcomes? But then at the same time, I kind of don't even want to know.
And the answer would be, at some point, we're only going to have one imported bee, if it, you know, kept on going, and it's going to be really tough to get food. China has, they're so chemical-based, they've wiped out almost every one of their bees, and they get a lot of their food now from Africa to support their places. And they're starting to spread chemicals, et cetera, down there in Africa. I mean, I hope we learn our lessons.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's drop down into what can we do to save things?
Thank you. I was just going to bring it there. So we know that this is an issue. Mm-hmm. We want to have beautiful, safe gardens that help improve the world and not help destroy it. We want to help bloom and grow and keep things moving. So what can we do, you know, on a small local level?
So this is every person has an action. The cool part about this is we all can make a difference. Okay. So the honeybee honestly is never going to fail. There's so much money into save that bee. I'm not worried about it. I can't focus there. But I think the honeybee is going to do fine because so much research is being there to spend it. On the native bees, I think it's a big deal. And I can't do anything about the ground nesting bees, but a gardener can. A gardener can provide less spray in their yards. When you look at as a bee burrows into their lawn, they don't hit weed block. They don't hit big areas that are all mulched. So to leave a few patches in the corners of your yard, just regular old dirt or whatever, you'll find that bees will gravitate to there. So leave some bare patches of dirt in a yard and a little less chemicals. Okay, one. Two, on the whole nesting species, go out and put holes in your yard, small, medium, and large. My company has them, the 4 mil, 6 mil, 8 mil, and learn what bees go into the holes. And we've got this whole, we teach it by video. We give you bee mail once a month. We say, hey, Maria, do this. And so we try to give it, you know, as much advice as we can to our followers to help them raise the whole nesting bees. Those two things provide bare earth, less chemicals, and holes. Those three things. As simple as that is.
So when you say holes, is there a natural way to have holes? Or is it has to be some sort of structure like the ones that you sell? Like, do these hole nesting bees, do they find holes in a tree?
Yes.
Like, is that a hole?
That is a hole in a tree.
But then you want to amplify it by, you want to amplify these holes and their ability to nest by creating something like what you guys make.
Because, and back into the why, in your yard, You've got a ton of pollen that probably naturally wasn't there. So because you've got so much pollen in one place, Maria, you need to have more bees. And so, yeah, I do want you to have, and we've taken away the old trees that were actually falling over, that were an old fallen apart tree with skags on it is perfect for bees. Well, we don't want those falling on our house, so we take them down.
Mm-hmm.
When I am now working against nature, I'm providing a lot of holes that didn't used to be there. Because they're in one tight area, you know, my hands are, you know, probably a 3-inch radius here. I've got all these bees using these holes. Pests easily can walk. I mean, this isn't natural. Pests can walk between one hole to the next. And shoot, all that effort, all those bee eggs that were laid, pests just have a heyday on them. Okay. Mm-hmm. So these holes that you put together just need to be opened. We have a thing called harvest in the fall. You're actually opening reeds or wood trays, and you've got cocoons and pests. And in the fall, because you cared about your yard, you pick the slugs out and you weed your garden. Well, you know, you kind of have to weed your bees as well. And so in the fall, we have little videos. We'll teach, it's like half an hour's worth of work. But you open stuff up and harvest your cocoons, and we'll tell you what to do. And so you're now managing an hour a year of bees for your yard in holes that you can open.
Okay, so tell us more about Crown Bees, what you guys do. You're so committed to education. So you can go on your website and learn so much about native bees for free on your website. But you also solve the huge issue of, okay, we've mowed an entire lawn. We've mulched an entire backyard to, you know, maximize every square inch of whatever garden or whatever landscaping we want. And so because our yard doesn't look the way it used to naturally look, there aren't opportunities for native bees to be happy. And you've solved that issue. So can you tell us a little bit about what Crown Bees does and the really cool, clever structures you guys make?
Thank you. Yes. And here's my company. So yeah, we do teach. Our website's very elaborate. You can go as deep as you need to go and come back. But we do want you to be successful. So there's a lot of teaching going on. Everything we have is local. We try to keep our carbon footprint down. So we, you know, it's all made locally, et cetera.
And where are you local?
We're local in Washington State.
Washington State. Okay.
It's important for us. We're probably the Nordstrom's of or BMW of the world. We care so much. And so our stuff has to be high quality. Some people shop at a Walmart, which is fine, or a Macy's or whatever. So that's cool. But our stuff is well made for the bee. What we sell are holes for bees, houses that keep the holes dry. And then because we work with science, here's accessories. You know, gosh, if you don't have any mud in your yard, well, here's mud. We know what the attractant is for a bunch of mason bees. And we have things that, accessories. So households, accessories, and bees. You know, whether you're in Ohio or California, we've tried to find the right bees of your area and get them back to you. It's as simple as that.
So say I'm in Los Angeles and I want some bees for my garden. I can buy a house. It looks like a little birdhouse, but it's got the holes in it for the bees to go. And it's very cute and it looks like it's beautiful wood. The bees that you might send to California might be different than the bees that you might send to Ohio.
Yes. Mostly, I don't want to spread diseases. In the fall, you've harvested your cocoons. You've got too many, Maria. So you send a whole bunch back to me. Now I've got all these California or New York bees back to me. I've got them labeled in boxes. And we push those bees that were found in New York back to New York. And so we're trying to be careful too. And the mostly we find right now, mud using bees. Okay. Now let's go into places where there wasn't mud, clay in the yard. And there were probably bees there beforehand. And those would be maybe resin. So pollen egg resin, pollen egg chewed up leaf bits. We don't have those yet. And so on one side of the company, we have bees that are found in every state, leaf cutting bees and mason bees that use clay. Another program we've got called the Native Bee Network. We're trying to find across the country. It's a 20-year program for the first 4 years, big citizen science project. Let's go find the bees of Iowa and put holes in every single county and find out what bees use these holes. And the ones, some bees migrate every single year. Some bees are going to hang around. Well, the ones that hang around, gosh, we could manage those. It'd be awesome. So the next series, phase two, we found the bees that kind of hang around. Well, why do they hang around? What crop do they use? How do we manage them? And then phase three, let's go make a lot of them. And then phase four, let's go put the bees back now into wild places, farmland, and backyard. But right today, no one has the bees of America. And this other side of crown bees is to let's go find them.
To document. So you're not only helping us help the world by like adding more bees to our local environment, but you're also helping document what bees are actually out there in the wild across the country.
And not only documenting, but going past every state monitors and they trap and they pin little bees onto boards and they go into museums. Mm-hmm. How many bees do they find? We're trying to say is, let's go find them and now let's go raise them. So I'm actively doing something, not just monitoring.
You're doing important work, Dave.
Well, you know, it's so fun. We care. We actually care.
Yeah. Well, and I like that you look at your grandkids' generation of it literally comes down to like whether or not our grandkids and their grandkids are going to have food that can be pollinated and grown. Okay. I have some more questions because I'm like, I wonder, can I have them in number one? Just to confirm, so if I was to get, like, native bees don't sting, so I could have them on my balcony, they could just be fine pollinating my plants, but not stinging me, or if I had kids around or anything like that.
Okay, so technically, the females do have stingers, but they don't have a disposition to want to sting. So my son, years ago, was held one of my bees and squished it in his hands. Well, he squished it, and the bees stung him. Don't sting me. But we couldn't find, there was no venom that was left over. There's no mark that we could find in his hand. He immediately opened his hand, on the screen. But you look later, there's no swelling of anything. So the venom in native bees are significant. You can't get anaphylactic shock from a native bee.
And then say I have a little balcony in New York City that I decide to put your smallest option on. Do those bees then help my local city block? Like, how far do they leave the hole and then come back? Like, are they helping on a larger scale than just my balcony?
Yes. So a honeybee will travel maybe 5 miles to gather their pollen. Your native bees, the mason bees, etc., really only go about 300 feet. That's about 6 acres as they gather their pollen. It's a very, very tight radius. If you put them in your balcony, and I'm going to say, second or third floor is probably fine. They're going to be buzzing along. They need a little spot of, like the mason bees, they use clay. You'd need a little spot of clay for them. They probably, not always, but it's a little more, I think they've done fine. Leaf cutting bees, they pull little leaf bits off a leaf, and holes and leaves are fine. And they're pollen egg leaf bits. I think they've done well in cities.
Or maybe the better question is for a listener who has a backyard, my dream one day to like actually have a home with a backyard and live in a suburb and you have neighbors like a normal person. You're not crammed in a tiny city like I am. Say you set up in your backyard one of, holes, whether it's your product or whether it's just figuring out your own holes because you want to help the environment, those bees are pretty much going to stay in your vicinity or they're going to kind of move around your neighborhood?
Both. We find that some disperse immediately, maybe genetically, poof. And then other bees, they found holes, they found pollen, and they found their clay or their leaf bits in the area. And that's all they need. And maybe less chemicals. But that's those three things, holes, pollen, and that separator piece. And they typically hang around. Yeah. It's such an easy thing, Maria. It's just easy. So, what can the gardener do? Part of it is, put out holes. And if you need bees, we've got them. In their HOA, you do not have to ask permission. A honeybee hive, because they're aggressive and they sting. Yeah, I understand why HOAs and stuff don't allow those in there. But your native bees are just gentle. But could you allow your HOA to understand that it's okay to not spray a yard? Can we just get the word out that?
Right. The pesticides sound like the real.
Yeah, I'm saying that lovingly. There's some big people out there with a lot of money that would not want to have me say that.
Well, I'll say it.
There we go. Pass the word around that whoever's listened to this, that they've learned a little bit. Just tell their friends and neighbors. Honestly, the more people that learn that there's a variety of bees that aren't honey, that do nest in holes and do pollinate, like, oh my gosh, you wouldn't believe. There you go. There's your lesson for the day.
Right. Is there a difference between using an organic pesticide versus a synthetic one in terms of bees? Like, is there less kill off there?
The more targeted you are, the better. And the less you spray on flowers, the better, I think would be the... And then the other thing we have learned is like lawn treatment. We've learned that every year I give you a couple hundred bees and I get 600 back from you every year, okay? But one year you sprayed lawn treatment in there and I got back 5 bees instead of 600. Mm. And it's just that, not that I killed the bees, it just smelled wrong and the bees flew someplace else. Eh, you know, we learn.
Okay. So you know that lawn treatment is going to affect whether kill or ward off.
Yeah.
Lawn treatment is going to affect whether or not you have bees pollinating your plants.
And what's in that lawn treatment? I don't know, Maria. I'm not a scientist. Right. And I just have to accept. I don't have the money to go yell. And, you know, no, we just accept it. And, you know, it's pure, simple education.
Right. But
if you look at nature, just go out and walk in the fields and the forest. What in nature has what pesticide and fungicide and larvicide and fertilizer? None. It works.
Right.
Why do I need to do this in my yard?
Well, I love what you said in the beginning of tying a ribbon on the rose that has aphids and waiting 3 days.
There you go.
Because nature does, we can't do that. You know, when my indoor citrus tree gets spider mites, I need to immediately fix it because indoor environments are so different than out, like there's no way for it to correct itself.
But I'm with you on that. Yeah.
Yeah. With an outdoor environment, knowing that nature has a way of correcting itself, that is a very interesting approach to not just immediately freak out and tie a ribbon around it and see if in 3 days if it can fix itself versus
run for the spray. Oh my gosh. Right. I'm going to go out and take soap and water and spray my stuff. Well, you just took away a whole pile of food for a ladybug.
Right. And we know from our episode earlier in season 2 with Summer Rae Noakes, ladybugs are very important for killing aphids and scale and all that good stuff. We had a whole episode on that. So Dave, where can we find you? Where can people go to your website to kind of investigate what you have to offer? I think that maybe this conversation has probably inspired a bunch of people to wake up and maybe experiment with bees in their gardens this summer.
CrownBees.com.
I encourage everyone to go just read one of the blogs on their websites, read something on the website because it's so educational, and then maybe go check out all the different cute little bee houses that Dave has to offer. They're so cute.
That's so awesome. Thanks, Maria. Well, this has been a good call. I truly appreciate that you've asked the questions that you've asked. It's been a good flow of conversation.
Yeah, I'm so happy to have you here. So thank you so much.
Have a great day.
Thank you, Dave, for all of your incredible information. If you are interested in learning more about pollinators or possibly even installing one of Dave's amazing native bee kits that he sells on his website, I would highly suggest heading over to crownbees.com to learn more. He just has so much information on his website. It's such a great place to educate yourself. Thank you to Mountain Crest Gardens for sponsoring today's episode. Plant friends, I really can't say enough wonderful things about how impressed I am with Mountain Crest Gardens. The shipping was unbelievable, but the quality and the variety of succulents they have on their website is just unparalleled. I am swooning over the Haworthia retusa that I got from them. Haworthia retusa is one of the Haworthias that have the little see-through windows in the leaves. I'll feature it later this month on my Instagram. To see the amazing variety of succulents that they have for yourself, head to mountaincrestgardens.com/bloom to get your coupon code for 15% off your own order. Let's show our new sponsor some love. And if you're looking to get yourself something from the Plant Friend apparel line, the link is in the bio and you can always go find it on my resource page at bloomandgrowradio.com/resources. Okay, plant friends, I'll see you next week. And until then, keep blooming and keep growing. Plant friends, thank you so much for tuning in today. If you like what you heard, make sure you are subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. And while you're making sure you're subscribed, why don't you head on over to the review section of whatever podcast player you're tuning into and leave us a review? I would greatly appreciate it.
If you want to join the Bloom and Grow Garden Club, head over to bloomandgrowradio.com/garden-club to join the planty fun. When you join, you get a free download of the Keep Blooming print that Molly Mansfield made exclusively for us, and you will also get an email with the password to the private Facebook group, which is what I like to call the plantiest corner of the internet. It is pretty amazing. For behind-the-scenes scoop, plant tips I learn along the way, and sneak peeks of future episodes, follow me on Instagram at @bloomandgrowradio. And plant friends, I'm here for you. So drop me a line if you have an idea for an episode, live event, or maybe if you're a planty business looking to sponsor the show. I am always here to help you keep blooming and keep growing.